Hi, I'm Christian McBride, and this is Piano Jazz. I'm sitting in for Mary McPartland, and my guest today is the amazing pianist Marcus Roberts. He's got the history of jazz at his fingertips. He can play everything from Jelly Roll Morton to Thelonious Monk and just about anything in between. Marcus Roberts, welcome to Piano Jazz.
Thank you so much. It's good seeing you, Christian.
It's great seeing you too, as always. It's amazing how your career has developed through the years. We first met in the mid-80s.
Right, in Philly, right?
That's right. And I've just always admired your work, and you've taught me a whole lot, as well as musicians in of my generation. We've always looked to people like yourself and Wynton as, you know, you guys gave us so much inspiration. We were coming on the scene, guys like Roy Hargrove and right. Nicholas Payton and myself, and thank you.
Oh,
that's
man.
All I could say.
No, man, it's my pleasure. You all have done a lot for us, too, because when we first started, you know, we just didn't have that many people who wanted to play, but now we have a bunch of great young talent, and you know, you're out here, and Josh Redman and them are still out here, you know, so we, you know, I feel like we got more of a real scene, kind of like yeah. how it used to be more in the old days a little bit.
If you don't mind me asking, I know you've talked about your early life many, many times, but if you wouldn't mind just kind of painting a picture of your childhood and how'd you get started and what were your early right. inspirations and playing, particularly playing jazz?
Right. Well, I started off self-taught, and my mother got me into it through the church, mm-hmm. You know, and I used to play Sunday service, and it was funny because sometimes those nice ladies who would sing, you know, you'd start off in B-flat, and you might change keys three or four times in a song.
That's right.
But, yeah, I started there and heard a lot of gospel music, you know, Staple Singers,
right.
Dixie Hummingbirds, you know, Mahalia, Aretha Franklin, Amazing Grace, all those things.
Right.
And then I got into jazz, really. I was going to listen to the All-Star game, baseball game, I remember, that day. And I was looking for it on the radio, and I found this jazz show called Swing Time in Jacksonville. And that was the first jazz I heard. And when I heard it, I was like, what? So
wow. That's
really what piqued my curiosity and got me going.
What was it exactly that you remember hearing? Or who was it? Do you remember?
Duke Ellington. They played some Duke, and they played some Benny Goodman with Teddy Wilson.
Right.
And Lionel Hampton.
Right.
And they were killing. And they were playing all kind of chords on the piano that I just had never heard. And so ever since that day, I've been trying to figure out what all these chords are.
Right. I know you grew up in Jacksonville. And you think about the state of Florida, such a large state, but right. like Northern Florida and Southern Florida, like you think of Jacksonville and Miami, they're like two completely different worlds.
It's true. It's true. I mean, you know, you figure the free and artistic part is really more considered more like, you know, South Beach and, you
right.
know, that area, you know, Boca Raton, that area. In North Florida, We're viewed more as kind of like, you know, college football and
right.
I don't know, it's a more of a blue collar kind of area.
Right.
But the funny thing is, Jacksonville has produced a lot of talent. A lot of good people have come out of there. So it is culturally very interesting how these things developed. I think I just was fortunate and blessed to run into people who really functioned well as mentors to me early on and kind of kept me on track. And you know how important that is when
Absolutely.
You're young in the developmental stage.
Right. Well, Marcus, if you wouldn't mind, would you bless us with a song?
Sure.
Speaking of where we first met in Philadelphia, there is a little inside joke with all of the guys that Hoagy Carmichael would be from Philly. Get it? Hoagie?
Oh,
sorry.
Anyway. Good humor, Christian.
So how about a little nearness of you?
Sure. Thank you.
Absolutely gorgeous, Marcus.
Thank you.
Absolutely gorgeous. Talking about your early days and really being introduced to the music, one thing that I've always have kept my eye out on and kept my antenna up with a lot of these younger musicians is the fundamentals, basic training, you know, just learning technique, basic harmony and theory. Do you find that a lot of younger musicians coming on the scene today have absorbed that more or absorbed that less than when you were coming up?
Maybe in some ways less. The difficulty in jazz is this music is hard to play because when you start trying to transcribe solos and learn tunes, the music presumes that you're already at a adult level of musical maturity.
Right.
And so we don't have a particularly well codified set of pieces for young folks just starting out with limited technical ability. So like if you know, if you want to learn a Monk piece, well, you know, Monk is not necessarily trying to help you. It is what it is.
Right.
So you either get it or you don't. And so I think a lot of the young folks coming up today, they are in the university system, but for example, the Florida State where I teach, I mean, they'll get here and they don't have some fundamental concepts together.
Right.
And it's not necessarily their fault, but traditionally we kind of all came up and it used to be like, well, if somebody had talent, then you taught them.
Right.
But now we're trying to get to a point where when we teach, we can take folks who may not necessarily be viewed as the most talented young people early on. Like if you think of John Coltrane versus Sonny Rollins, for example.
Right.
Train, the early recordings of Train, you're kind of like, well, he sounds cool.
You know? Right.
But it's like, but each successive record, he's playing more and more saxophone, whereas Sonny Rollins, I mean, even
early. He came out smoking.
Oh, my God. He just came out like, boom, like, oh, my. So I think that if we could have a world where it's more about diligence and a codified system, and then you use that to teach a person how to develop their imagination. I think that's where our focus probably needs to be.
Before we ask you to play another tune, would you mind telling us a story about how you met Wynton?
Sure. The funny thing, when I first met Wynton's father, Ellis Marsalis, in Chicago, because I remember Chicago in 82, because it was, I've never been that cold in my life, man. I mean, you could freeze to death in less than a minute.
Yes.
So it was then, and his group was, it just came out with his first record called Wynton Marsalis. And,
right.
So, man, we, you know, we heard that band with Kenny Kirkland and Branford and them, and I was like, man, I got to stay in touch with this cat. So I talked to, we call him E.
Right.
I talked to Mr. Marsalis, and he gave me Wynton's number. And at first, I used to talk to him over the phone.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could kind of tell that he didn't really want to talk to me that much. So he'd be like, well, man. So finally he was like, well, man, what are you dealing with? I mean, are you working on stuff? I said, well, I'm working on some stuff, you know. I said, well, man, how can I get out here and play? He says, get out here and play. He said, I don't know. He says, you need to practice. So anyway, we go back and forth for a few years. And finally, I remember he told me, he said, well, if my piano player, Kenny Kirkland, ever leaves, I'll call you to do some gigs. And I think at the time he was just saying that.
Now, he hadn't heard you at this point, had he?
He had.
Okay.
But he was not impressed. And so, you know, but he sent me some Monk records. I mean, he's part of what got me into Monk. He sent me some Monk records. He said, man, check this out, you know. And you know, we would talk. But it was really more the intellectual component of it. He had no particular respect for my musical ability at that time. So once I finally sat, I remember I even came to New York and sat in with him at the Village Vanguard.
Yeah.
And oh my God, Kenny Kirkland was playing just a ridiculous amount of piano that week. Oh, I mean, I wish there was documentation of that.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Anyway, so I really was considering quitting after that week. I just said, well, this is really a waste of time. I'm obviously never going to reach what this is. But he came to Tallahassee, Florida, which is where I was going to school, maybe 3 or 4 months later. And I sat in there, and of course, you know, you hometown, you home, you know.
Right.
And so everything felt a lot more relaxed and comfortable. And so a few months after that, he asked me to come out and do some gigs. And I remember I called him on the phone. I said, man, this is great. I said, well, I said, you know, they sent me all these tapes. And I said, "Well, man, how much of this should I learn?" He said, "Everything." I'm like, "What?"
You're right.
So I was like, "Yeah, but I don't really know." He says, "Look, I don't have time to get into it, bro. Learn the music. I'll see you in 2 months."
Wow.
And that's kind of where it started. And after the first week of kind of hanging out, we just became very close and tight. And it's, you know, it's just been that way because we do see things philosophically, I think, in very similar ways.
Yes.
Even though he is viewing it, you know, from a perspective of trumpet player, and I'm all, so we always have these playful debates about trumpet and piano, and, you know, right, which instrument is more relevant and all this stuff. But, you know, it's always in the interest of artistic inspiration. And yes, as you know, musicians are funny. I mean, we like to debate and talk and go back and forth.
Absolutely.
And that's what I think inspires the music when we play together and improvise as a group.
That friendly fire.
Yeah, I think so.
That's right. Yeah. You mentioned that the first thing that you heard on that radio show when you discovered jazz for the first time was Duke Ellington.
Right.
And, of course, Duke Ellington is the backbone of all of this music.
For sure.
How about a little Ellington for us?
Sure, I'll do Mood Indigo, which Russell Proko, clarinet player that played with Duke, said they played it every night. He was there for 27 years, so.
Right
on. Mood Indigo.
Have mercy.
Yes, indeed.
That was beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Marcus. I would like to ask you if you could talk about Duke Ellington as a pianist, because I know there's a lot of people who, when they discuss Duke Ellington, they talk about Duke Ellington as a band leader,
right.
As a composer, but I don't feel they really give him his rightful due on the piano.
No doubt about that. Duke Ellington was an absolutely fantastic pianist, very well trained. For example, Carolina Shout, written by the great James P. Johnson, who created Stride Piano, was available on piano roll, and I think Duke took that piano roll and he slowed it down mm-hmm. and learned it like note for note. So his attention to detail,
right.
scholarship, and all of that, I mean, started early. And don't forget, he was really like an art student. I mean, he was going to be a painter at first.
Right.
But I think studying that gave him a real glimpse into how to stack colors and use colors compositionally. And so the piano eventually became the vehicle for his big band.
Right.
But if you listen to his big band recordings, I mean, he always would use the piano to like set the mood, set the tempo.
Yes.
He would use it behind solos to kind of keep people in tune with what the melody of the song was. So he's just a complete genius.
Right.
But as great as he was as a pianist, he still ultimately decided, well, you know what? I want to be a composer. I want to orchestrate. I want to develop other people's personality.
Right.
And it's all going to be me anyway in the end.
Well, there's more music in a minute with this amazing pianist, Marcus Roberts. Our program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. I'm Christian McBride, and this is Piano Jazz with Marion McPartland and friends. Marcus, I'd like to ask you about your development as a composer. I remember vividly, I believe it was 1987, I was listening to the radio in Philly. I was in high school, and a song called Country by Choice came on the air, and it was your debut record with Charlie Rouse,
right.
Reginald Veal, Elvin Jones, and Wynton, and I ran to the record store.
Wow.
And I like to talk about your own discoveries and development as a composer.
Right. Well, my belief about composition in jazz music is that we use composition as a way to delve into the specific problems that we feel we can solve in jazz music that perhaps have not been solved. So certain, for me, they're, you know, always, as I said, I'm interested in chords, how they move, how they relate. And the chord progression a lot of times is like a big thing for me. And
yeah.
I like to base my arrangements and everything sort of on a chord cycle. And
right.
so that particular blues, for instance, it's a 12-bar blues, but it moves every two measures. Which
right.
Was just like an interesting thing that I wanted to kind of explore. And I've always had a real interest in John Coltrane, Monk, Duke, Ahmad Jamal, and Jelly Roll Morton. I mean,
mm-hmm.
just to name a few. But
right.
it's always a question as a composer of your specific objective problems that you want to solve or deal with or things that you like to do, but also your composing for your band and what the strengths are of that group.
Yeah.
But I think I started off, first of all, mainly just in terms of my own artistic agenda and, you know, composing specifically for people. That came later in my career for me.
Uh-huh, right. Well, would you mind playing a little taste of an original composition of yours?
Sure.
The Party's Over?
Be glad to.
Thank you. Yes, the party is over. Look out. Thank you, Marcus. That was fantastic. I wanted to get up and start jamming, man.
Yeah, I know.
Wow. I'm going to be selfish and ask if I could get some with you right about now.
Man, I would love that. I would love that.
It's been so long since we've actually played together. I'm just itching right now. I can't
wait.
That's right. How about a little Just Friends?
Sounds great, man. Let's do it. Thank you.
Marcus, that was beautiful. Thank you for that, man.
Man, I enjoyed it so much. Just hearing you play was great. hearing you.
Thank you, Marcus. I'm having a great time with Marcus Roberts, and we'll have more music in just a minute. You can find artist information, set list, and more on our website, pianojazz.npr.org. I'm Christian McBride, sitting in for Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. May I ask you to bless us with another one of your songs? I see Hidden Hues down
right.
here.
Right. That's just a mood tune. I just kind of deal with the relationship of kind of quiet textures in this one.
Oh, let's hear it.
Okay.
Beautiful, Marcus. Thank you. Sure. Hidden Hues.
Uh-huh.
From that piece, I'm moved to ask you, where do you see the role of classical music in relation to modern jazz?
Well, they're both very sophisticated art forms. Classical music has a longer history. Jazz has a short history, but since we make up stuff on the spot, I think that's why
right.
we got so much done in 100 years' time.
right.
And, to me, jazz music is the only thing we have that kind of matches, like, the technological world that we live in, because it's a split-second world where stuff happens immediately. And so the only music that really matches that, jazz music has that latent sophistication built into it. It draws from music from all over the world, so it's a global music.
Yes.
And again, everybody's brought in. It's just like, so I think that classical music has to, at this time, probably draw more from the inspiration of what jazz has presented in the world
yes.
to maintain the depth of what's been done.
Right.
But of course, it's just an absolutely fantastic music, and for piano in particular, there's just so much great literature.
Right.
That's been written, for the instrument. So it's great music, but we've got to continue to build the jazz audience and the classical audiences and think a bit more collaboratively.
Yes, I think. Absolutely. You know, is there a point in your career where there was like a watershed moment? Because I think everybody has that, even if it's not just dealing with art, but just dealing with life in general, where one day you wake up and go, now I figured it out.
Yeah, I think, obviously, when I went out with Winton, that was one. I think when I did the Portraits in Blue recording and I first started doing stuff with orchestra, that was one. I believe when I started my trio with Jason Marcellus and Roland Guerin, that was certainly a moment as a group when I really wanted to figure out if I could put a great band together and figure out what's involved in that, what does that entail. And I think finally, of late, teaching. I think that's done a lot for my playing.
That could definitely trigger a different type of thing when you start teaching, right?
Yeah, because your job is to figure out how to bring something that you figured out of somebody else
right.
who may not have your experiences to draw from.
Right. Right,
so it's almost like you got to figure out not just how to teach them, but you got to figure out how to use what they know to get it across to them.
That's right. And that's a hard job.
It is.
Well, there's more to come with Marcus Roberts. Our program is made possible in part by the Friends of Piano Jazz and is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. I'm Christian McBride, and this is Piano Jazz with Marion McPartland and Friends. Marcus, we talked a little earlier about Monk, and you can never talk about Monk too much, or you can never listen to Monk too much. You can never play Monk too much. I like to ask you the same question about Monk as I asked you about Duke Ellington. If you could talk about Monk as a pianist.
Well, first of all the recordings of Monk, even going way back to 47 when he first started playing for Blue Note, it always was like playing at a profound level.
Yeah.
You could tell he was way beyond even the bebop generation that he helped produce. They all talk about Monk. Sonny Rollins.
Right.
Miles. All of them basically say, well, he taught us how to play.
Right.
I think that his role during the bebop movement was so subtle but so real.
Yes.
And it's just a shame that it took so long for everybody to dig where he was and who he was. But as a pianist, the biggest thing that you're trying to do with the piano is explore sound.
Right.
You're trying to discover different ways to pedal. You're trying to figure out different ways, different views of counterpoint, because the piano can play more than one line at a time. And of course, you're always interested in the case of Monk, using themes, using different concepts of voicing, different registers. So he'd play stuff way up high, put the pedal all the way down, and he'd play stuff way down low. So he would comp anywhere on the piano, just like Duke.
Right.
He would always play thematically, and he would always be swinging.
Hello.
Is it Ben Reilly when he joined Monk's group? He said, Ben walked up to Monk. He said, well, man, what do you want me to do? And Monk said, swing.
Yeah.
And Ben said, well, man, I know that. But he said, so when I get through doing that, then what you want me to do? He said, swing some more.
That's right. Monk was always so, this seems like a basic premise, but he was always so imaginative as well.
Well, that's the thing. In the time piece that they did on Monk in 1964, he told them that his goal was to find as many different ways to use syncopation as he could.
Right.
And right. I think of Monk almost as a combination of a Scott Joplin figure, like somebody who provided us with a huge amount of what I call modern folk music.
Right.
His music is so soulful, so jazz oriented, but then the design that he used on the piano was very complicated and very sophisticated.
Absolutely, right. How about we play a little Monk?
Oh, man, I'd love that.
A little Boulevard Blues. Now, this is on your new project, correct?
That's right. You know, we put that CD out, and I hadn't put out a CD in a while, and so we're very excited about it. It's and this is a tune that I've been playing for years. So when we recorded it, it just felt real natural, like something that just made sense, you know, to do. And it's on a CD that features Monk, Ellington, Jelly Roll Morton, Fats Waller, and Scott Joplin.
Mm.
So it's called New Orleans Meets Harlem, Volume 1.
Hello. when we do Boulevard Blues, you don't have any, like, tricky things there I need to get
with you before
we play it, do we?
Well, see, that's the other great thing about Monk, man, is that you could play Monk's music with all kind of sophisticated this and that, or you can just play it the way we play any standard.
Right.
So we just gonna play, man, the way we like to. So you're not having to worry about any of that.
Right on. There we go.
All right. Thank you. You in there.
Can't go wrong with that, man. Mm-mm. Can't ever go wrong with the blues.
No, I don't think so.
We just mentioned your new project that you recorded Boulevard Blues on.
Right.
What's some other things you have going on right now?
Well, there's also another trio record that is a suite of music that was commissioned by Chamber Music America called From Rags to Rhythm. And in this suite, I try to kind of show the influence that just the feeling of ragtime has had on our group specifically, yeah, and kind of the history of the music. And also we use it as a chance to kind of showcase our trio philosophy, which is that the bass and drums are out front. And we really, really try to use some pretty sophisticated improvisation through cues and themes that happen throughout the suite.
Yes.
So that's one project. And then there's a solo piano recording of just pretty ballads that I've always played and enjoyed playing, called A Touch of Romance. And uh-huh, there we, you know, Mood Indigo is on it, and The Nearness of You is on it, and Hidden Hues is on it. You know, so some of the things are on that one as well. So we have that, and also I'm going to redo Deep in the Shed, which I did 20 years ago. And,
oh, man.
Yeah.
What a great album.
So I want to redo that because it's changed a lot over the years.
Uh-huh. Well, this has been such a treat to sit here and talk with you and make music with you and reminisce and
it's
all of this good stuff.
It's been very, very enjoyable. And I got to say, you got a great kind of natural conversational style of interviewing, you know?
Oh, thank you, my man. Man, I was wondering if we could end the day with a song that means a lot to me, man. As I said before, when your first solo record, The Truth Is Spoken Here, was released, that was a very important record for myself and a lot of other cats who I was hanging with at that time, like Joey DeFrancesco.
Right.
And Country by Choice was one of our anthems at that time. So I was wondering if we could end the day by back and playing that.
I would love to, man. Thank you.
Marcus, that brings back a lot of memories. Thank you so much for being on the show. And once again, it was a thrill talking and playing with you.
You too, Christian. Thanks a lot, man. It's great seeing you as always.
You've been listening to Marian McPartland's Piano Jazz with guest host Christian McBride. Today's guest has been Marcus Roberts. Join us each week at this time when Piano Jazz brings you outstanding artists for conversation and improvisation. Piano Jazz is recorded at Manhattan Beach Studios in New York City and is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Duke Marcos, assistant recording engineer Tyler Hartman, mastering engineer David Mitchell, engineering assistant Dale Anderson, production coordinator David Lyon. The executive producer is Elaine Freeman. We love to hear from you. Contact us by email. Our address is pj@scetv.org. Or if you want to use postal mail, address your correspondence to Piano Jazz, SCETV Radio, 1101 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and NPR. Contributors include the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, celebrating 10 years of support for the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. And the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR.